Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and main.dalecarnegie.com. Today, our guest is, right in front of me here. Saeed Eastman is the GM and CEO of Jobs in the U.S. My God, has recruitment changed?
It has gone through a complete 180. It's gone from where you can actually get to the person you're hiring to now you're barely ever going to reach out to somebody that actually is going to place you in a job. You're either dealing with a machine or some other technology.
I mean, I think about the fact that just in the last 5-7 years, we're not talking about 20 years. It's completely not even, you can't even talk about it. But even the last few years, the impersonalness of recruitment.
Yep.
And yet it's still such a personal world.
It's the fact that recruitment has changed has impacted everybody in our industry, everybody in all the states, employers as well as job seekers. The changes have been so dramatic that it has caught job seekers off guard. It has caught employers off guard, both big and small. And software and technology is finally catching up. At the same time, billions of dollars are being invested into the HR/recruitment segment of the industry. It used to be, we've basically taken what I would consider traditional classified ads, put them online, but put them on steroids. So now, instead of getting 4 or 5 resumes mailed to you or 4 or 5 cover letters, you're getting 100 individuals. We've trained people to point and click and think that they're going to get a job by clicking on a button, when the reality of it is they still need to do some really solid work and research to find themselves a job.
So let's take it from each side. Let's start with the individual side. So an individual person is interested in a job. They have a resume. Let's just start with that basic premise, okay? And I hear it all the time. What do I do with it? Right? Where do I put it online? Where do I get the most bang for my buck? How do I ensure that somebody sees it? How does it not go in the quote-unquote black hole?
Yep. So what job seekers have come against is this idea that they've been trained to believe that if they have a resume, if they upload it, they are completely and absolutely guaranteed an opportunity or visibility into an opportunity. The reality of it is this, is you have a resume. If you put it online and put it on too many sites, you do show up on all these different sites. And so for all intents and purposes, you show up as desperate. So you have to be very selective about where you put your resume. Secondly, people create resumes. Their resumes can be over-doctored to the point where machines spit them out, reject them. So over-formatted, overlaid out, too many pictures, things that screen people out. Those are things that really impact job seekers. Secondly, the business of working with job seekers is traffic arbitrage. So basically what's happening is this, is instead of delivering real quality jobs to job seekers, we're basically training job seekers to apply to as many jobs as possible. And I think that's counterproductive to serving the employer, which is why I think the business that we're in at Jobs in the U.S. is changing dramatically. And what we're trying to do to work with employers and job seekers is changing.
Do you find that if an employee, if an individual is looking for a job, that you mentioned that they have so many choices, right? How does an employee, or I should say in this case an individual, make that decision and make that choice?
So my recommendation to individuals when they're about to go look for a job is to pursue it in the same fashion they would pursue any other decision. Pros and cons. Looking at your choice for a company It's a relationship. You have to decide, do you want a big company, small company? Do you want a local company, or do you want somebody, some location that's remote? Do you want to work? Do you want a company that offers you growth path, or do you just want to be able to be the person that does, you know, square peg in a square hole, right? So you have to be methodical about selecting your company, selecting the organization that you want to work with. Secondly, I think it's really important, depending on who you are as an individual from a perspective or position you're looking for, whether you actually go to a job board or whether you leverage your network, or it's a blend of both. Maybe the job boards are a place to do research. And then once you find the company that's hiring and you find the positions you're looking for, you might want to look at your network to see, is there anybody that can make a referral for me? So there is a process to doing this, but unfortunately, because of technology, we're making it so that people seem to think that by just going to a job board and placing your resume there, that is what you're supposed to do.
Well, that seems to be what we've trained, right?
Correct.
We've kind of trained them to do that. It's not like it's – I mean, you watch television, and there are plenty of ads out there for people. Hey, just go here and put your resume here and do that. And if you go online, click here and put your resume here. It's saturation of the market, right? It's saturation of where, when, and how. And I do think that employees or individuals really are confused.
Right. The interesting part about individuals in their search process is it's free service. So individuals don't really have any skin in the game from a perspective of, I'm not investing money for me to get myself an opportunity, right? But I think they're forgetting that their investment in their own career choices, in their own job search processes, is time. If they should be invest, if they don't have to invest money, they should invest time. That time is due diligence and research on the right opportunities. I always tell people, I say, if you apply to one company two or three times for varying degrees of positions, you will most likely get blacklisted by that employer. They'll say either you don't know what position you want, you are applying for positions you're overqualified for, you're applying for positions you're underqualified for. So it's really important that you approach that job search process in a methodical fashion.
No, that's absolutely true. There's no question about that. All right, so, you know, we've talked a little bit about the individual. Let's talk about employers for a few seconds here. From a general statement, employers also have an incredible amount of choices today. Let's start with a basic question. Why is it still beneficial for an employer to buy into a program?
So I always say to employers, and as I talk to employers in all the different states that we do business in various associations and groups, it is extremely important that you approach recruitment from a perspective of branding, creating an employer of choice model. It's a strategy. It is not necessarily just placing an ad like you would traditionally put a classified. Now you have to approach it from a perspective of there's so much other noise from all other employers looking for the same people that I'm looking for. What do I do to differentiate myself? And in order to do that, it's really important that, one, you're always out there recruiting. Even when you don't have positions that are open, you should create an opportunity that allows you to put yourself out there as an employer of choice, so that when an opportunity does arise, you're not caught on your heel without having a pipeline of potential candidates.
I think that's the key, right? The pipeline part. And correct. Especially today's day and age, the pipeline is a big challenge because unemployment's low. I mean, as you know, 6-7 years ago, finding people, cake. Today, finding talent's a real challenge. And the argument could be made, the real good talent is working, right? Though I've always made the argument that no matter what the economy is, good talent always finds work. Right? It's the same thing. So the reality is that you're talking about creating that bench strength, that pipeline. How do employers do that on a consistent basis?
So it's gotten harder these days to create your bench. It's harder. It's gotten harder to reach the audience. Why is that the case? Because now there are so many other places where job seekers are hanging out. So do you create a social media strategy? Do you create a display, an online display strategy? Do you put yourself, do you advertise on job boards? Do you advertise in print? Do you do something on TV, right? So now it's really important that in order for you to build that bench, you really have to have, so what we're doing at Jobs in the US as an example, we're incorporating a lot of different components that would normally be under the umbrella of an advertising agency. So now when we talk to employers, we say, look, you need to have email as part of your strategy. You need to have an online presence on our job. You need to have your job on the job board. You also need to have some component of social and more in targeted social search, right? You need to have some initiatives around display, right? Having that approach creates a holistic strategic initiative on recruitment. That is much more it's the enterprise way of finding talent, but it should be available to small businesses. And realistically for us in Maine, in New Hampshire, Vermont, which are our three prominent states,
right.
Those are the states where we know when we talk to employers, we say, look, just because you have 500 employees or just because you have 1,000 employees and you're an S small to medium business, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't approach your initiative as if you were a Walmart. Or you just have to scale your budget down to suit who you are, but you still have to have all the different components.
When somebody's saying, hey, I'm trying to create a brand, right, an employment brand, what today does that encompass?
So it used to be that you would just be an employer of choice because, one, you have longevity, right? Or it might be that you're an IBM. So people say, oh, you know what? I'm an IBM, I'm a Xerox, et cetera. Now, when you're talking about employment brand, your employment brand has to involve employment culture. And culture can be spun a bunch of different ways, but it's important to be able to articulate who you are as an organization to employers, right? Secondly, I think it's really important to tell a story. So I, as a prime example, one of our clients is a big employment compensation company in Maine. And when talking to their CEO, I've discovered their CEO has an amazing story. You know, started within the organization 20 years ago in one role and moved his way through an organization. That is a story that tells why that brand is important. When you talk to other members of his organization, you find out a similar thing. That does not translate in a job description. So to create a brand, it's really important to be able to tell that story about who you are as an organization. What do you represent to the people that work for you? And also what type, that will also allow you to attract the right people for your organization. Because some people are looking for, I want to get into one company and I want to work there for the rest of my life. Some people want to get into a company and say, you know what, I want to learn what I learned and then I want to move on. And there's room for both. But that's, to me, when I think of employment branding, it's really important that you tell a story, you have a vision for what your organization represents, and also you have an identity of what type of people you really want to attract.
When somebody's trying to convert that into what written world or pictures or so forth, do you find that that's where they struggle sometimes, that they're able to take that vision in their head? I find a lot of visionaries struggle putting it down on paper.
So a couple of things that I always, especially recently as I talk to employers, I say take the job description that your HR department gives you. So if your HR has, this is the codes, this is the position, et cetera, that somebody has to take that job description and translate it to an ad, a selling advertisement as opposed to a job description. So the job description now has become a selling ad. So i.e. it offers some degree of brand, right? It offers some degree of what the benefits are. But it really is telling somebody, you know what, this is a call to action. Act. If you really love this job, love this company, this is something that you should do. Secondly, I think it's really important these days that you take whatever story you're trying to create for your brand and turn it into a 60-second video or a 90-second video. Video is much more captivating these days than text alone. And that can be done very inexpensively. There are companies out there that use iMovie from one of the big phone providers, right?
Sure.
For creating simple 90-second videos. It doesn't have to be shot like a production, but it still can be powerful. And so that's where I'm thinking, you know, the effort that has to be put in.
We're going to talk more about that effort here You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLLB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, General Manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsinme.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobsinme to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we're having a great conversation with Saeed Eastman. He is the general manager and CEO at Jobs in the U.S., and we're talking about recruitment today. And, you know, it's a big topic. It's such a huge topic. You know, during the break, you mentioned this dichotomy that's out there right now, this challenge between employers that say, I'm having a heck of a time finding great talent. Some cases, they're just talent in general. And employees that say, hey, I never hear from employers. Talk about that.
You know, I think what's happened is as the industry has gotten more advanced, we've created software solutions that have disintermediated the relationship between the individual and the employer or the hiring manager. A prime example is the applicant tracking system. It's a wonderful tool. It's a wonderful asset for employers to have a CRM, a system of record. But the problem is this, is it shouldn't be a filtration system. It should offer you an opportunity to reach out to as many individuals as possible. So every applicant tracking system should send a notification to individuals saying, hey, you have applied for this position. We will keep your information. We will review it. We will contact you. And there should be a follow-up response, whether the person gets the position or not, saying, hey, by the way, unfortunately, you were not called in for an interview, but we'll keep you in mind for other opportunities. That never happens. Systems have basically created this black hole for individuals, but at the same time, they've isolated employers who are really looking for people. And so my first instinct when I talk to companies is to say to them, every individual should be touched in some capacity, whether it's electronically or by phone. There are lots and lots of job seekers that don't get an opportunity at jobs because they're basically selected out. Sometimes they're selected out by machines. Sometimes they're selected out by laziness. If you get 1,000 resumes for a job or 100 resumes for a job and you only look at 10, 90 of them don't get touched. And that's a sad state, especially when we talk about unemployment in Maine and all these other segments being so tight, and people are still looking for good work.
Well, we all know that a resume only is one piece of the puzzle. And part of the challenge that certainly we see a lot is that the resume always doesn't tell the story. It's a piece of the story. And resumes have got to the point where we're at 2 pages. You can't tell the story in 2 pages. You can tell snippets of the story. And certainly we do a lot of work with individuals and to get their resume to tell a story better. But the reality is even in the snippet of a few lines, you have to make sure that you talk to these people. And I know we've been working on a job search right now. Somebody came into us and on the resume was terrible. But because something in it, because somebody knew somebody who knew somebody, right? Let's be honest. Yep. That's how it really works in the real world. We went, all right, we'll talk to them. Well, now they're one of the top candidates of the position, even though the resume was awful, right? And so if we had selected purely on resume and not on having at least some insight, this person wouldn't be not moving forward.
Yeah. A resume is a summary, as you say, which I think is a perfect way of describing it. It's a summary of years and years of experience in aggregate, right? So the individual coming in can actually relate why they've had so much experience, why they've had all these different employers, and why they've had a great story to tell. The other thing that I think is really important is, you know, if we screen people out for a typo, if we screen people out because the layout is wrong, we're basically throwing out really great talent out the door. And I'm a firm believer in everybody should be given an opportunity at a job. If they're underqualified, tell them you're underqualified. If you're overqualified, tell them. But by ignoring them, you're hurting your brand, which goes back to that talking point that we had earlier. It's important that you reach out to the people that apply to your jobs. It's important that as job seekers, you provide a summary, a resume that is clean, as accurate as possible, and as up to date as possible.
Well, you talk about branding, right? So an employer that doesn't respond to a resume, that doesn't help a brand at all. As a matter of fact, that really can tarnish a brand, right? I never heard from them. And then you can think of words that follow that, right? And that's just the reality. And they could be a potential customer, a client later. There's a million different reasons to do it right.
You're paying to hurt your brand in recruitment. You hurt your brand overall if you advertise for positions and you don't respond to people, right? So it's really important that there is some degree of follow-up. And I think that the challenge has been employers and job seekers are passing each other in the night, right? There should be some light has to be shed on that spot in the middle where they intersect. And that really is technology. At Jobs in the U.S., what we have done, specifically for all employers in all the states that we work in, and we're working in about 50 states plus Washington, D.C., and we're providing tools for free to small businesses that help them manage the volumes of resumes that they have, to create a system of record, to communicate, to create a response back to job seekers. We're trying to mitigate against that problem of the black hole. The job seeker applied and didn't hear anything. We're also trying to help the employer on the front end. We're saying, look, if you are using your inbox as your system of record, you're hurting yourself. You have to have some technology. So I'm not against technology. I'm for technology used properly. And from that perspective, it doesn't have to be a big applicant tracking system costing your organization thousands and thousands of dollars. It could be something as what we offer at Jobs in the U.S. that is easy to use, simple, and it's free.
Well, the old keep it simple, stupid,
it.
Right? The
That's
old KISS
it.
Principle
yeah.
to make sure that, I mean, you need a simple job. Now, look, you're a large employer, you know, tens of thousands of employees. Certainly, you're going to need a little more sophistication. You're
Correct.
Going to need, you know, that we're talking about your typical employer, which in most of these rural states are a family business, are, you know, someone that has 20 to 100 employees, right? That's what we're talking about.
And we, and from my perspective, keep in mind, I've joined Jobs in the U.S. in 2016 after 20 years of working for big job boards in Boston and Chicago and around this country, and dealing with national brands, international brands, opening up markets internationally, et cetera. But when I came to Maine, I think the most important thing that I saw was this, is that, or, and by the way, any of the states around here, it's really important that the employers realize that there are tools out there for them that are reasonable, that offer the same value, and they're not complex, And the industry should not pass them by. The world of recruitment and HR should not pass them by. Let's face it, there's some degree of compliance that drives all of our businesses.
Of course.
But then there are some things that we can do to be better at serving both the company and serving the people that we're trying to attract.
Well, I've talked about this many times. Sometimes common sense is uncommon, right? And so that we've over-engineered, over-complicated, and over-achieved in some areas. Now, that doesn't mean that some of the systems aren't great. I know companies that use systems that are very complicated, and for the number of employees they have, they need that sophistication and complication. But most employers do not need that. Most employers need something that get them what they need when they need it, and that's not every day, right? That's the other thing, is that certainly in this environment, a lot of these companies only hire a few times a year. We're not talking hiring every single day of the week. And, you know, HR, it's a piece of their job. It's not like big companies that have full-time recruitment people that do this every second.
I mean, we're dealing with employers that the HR person is the payroll person, and in some instances also the owner. And what we're saying to them is, hey, we're here to help because we have some solutions that you should be using. Whether you use them or not, it's up to you, but we're offering them to you. We're offering them to everybody else. They might give you a competitive advantage, right? The other thing that I think is really important in this space is that employers and job seekers need to just, to your point, simplify processes. So job seekers should make their resumes short and concise, right? Employers should look at their apply process. No employer should have a multi-page apply process, because in the end, there's an awful lot of times where when people look for jobs, they're at home. They're sitting at home. They're trying to fill out an application, and their child, their spouse, somebody interrupts the process. A phone rings, a doorbell rings, and then they stop. And then the application goes away. And then they lost an opportunity. The employer has lost an opportunity to engage that job seeker. And so the more complex your apply process, the less likely that you're going to get the volume that you want. I think it's important to think quality. I think it's important to think, I also need to cast as wide a net as possible. So I'm not saying you shouldn't reach as many people. You should reach a lot of people. You should also focus on simplifying things to the way where you're getting enough information, but still have to have some decisions made when the person comes in. Don't try to make a decision without ever talking to a person, because the likelihood of you getting the wrong person is very high if you do that.
No, there's no question that, you know, if you talk about some of the challenges that employers face, and we all know what they are, right? We all know what the challenges to employers are. One of the things that I find that's interesting today is they overcomplicate compliance, right? So the compliance side of it even becomes complicated. And yes, there are rules. You need to keep every record that comes in. You need to keep a copy of it digitally. Or there's all that. I'm not, in no way am I minimizing those, right? Because you have to be compliant. As a matter of fact, it's critical. But the question then becomes, to what degree?
I always recommend that at a minimum, you should have one system of record. If payroll is your system of record for payroll, an example, any of the major payroll providers will provide some degree of light HR. They will also be able to offer some degree of light recruitment solutions. And that goes for, you can name enterprise level payroll providers or small to medium business payroll providers. That to me is critical. So compliance has to be something where it's manageable. You don't want to create a system of record that nobody knows how to use. Because with turnover, it just becomes a solution. It's no different than getting an exercise machine that you think is brilliant, and it just becomes a clothes hanger in your bedroom.
Yes. So. Yeah, nobody's ever heard of that.
Never
done that. It's an awful expensive clothing hanger. Yes. But, you know, you can run to your clothes that way, right? It's just saying. We're going to be right back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLLB 100.5 FM, and we'll be right back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello. I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsandme.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsandME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsandme.com. That's jobsandme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plato and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then, hey! The dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock, and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And we're talking with Saeed Eastman, and he is the GM and CEO of Jobs in the U.S. You know, I want to get into specifics about job boards themselves. So job boards were all the rage. Then other platforms came on, LinkedIn, other aspects out there. They seem to be having a little bit of a resurgence lately. Why is that?
Supply and demand, right? So the challenge for employers is getting your name out there, and the job boards have predominantly been the way for getting the ads displayed. People are not advertising as much in print, so that's the vehicle. The job board industry has changed, though, right? So 1994, you know, the largest job board, Monster.com, founded the space. It was the first, 1994. Now there's tens of thousands of job boards. Anybody with a $10,000 budget could potentially put together a job board. At the same time, not all job boards are true job boards where there's where an employer is advertising directly on that job board. There's an awful lot of traffic arbitrage and traffic sales and advertising sales intermediaries. So Indeed, as an example, is a player in our space, and we compete against them and compete against them well. They sell directly to employers, but they started out as a traffic
arbiter.
An aggregator,
right?
Correct.
Aggregator, pretty
they
much,
basically
yeah.
their main focus was selling a search engine optimization.
Right.
ZipRecruiter is another one. Same thing. But when you talk to, when I look at the job boards, so you have CareerBuilder, you have Monster, you have Indeed, you have Zip, you have Jobs in the U.S., and you have a lot of other niche boards. My take on job boards is as much as the national players are key to what we're doing, they're great for bringing visibility to the industry. So I think I welcome all the advertising that they're doing. But the reality of it is when I look at job boards, I look at how job seekers use job boards. So if I'm looking for a job, I'm looking for a job locally. I search where I live, where my kids go to school, where my spouse works, right? So does it really matter whether I'm on Indeed or a Career Builder or anybody? If a job board in Maine, like Jobs in ME, is delivering opportunities for me that are local and relevant, that is as important to me as going into any other player. So from the approach we're going after with job boards is we're creating 50 hyper-local job boards, and those 50 hyper-local job boards are only going to serve local jobs for local job seekers. We do this 50 times across the country, right? The same goes for employers. Employers should know that when they advertise on Jobs in ME, that their jobs are not muddled in with work-from-home jobs from California or work-from-home jobs from Texas, right? I always tell people, I say, how many Uber jobs can you see on a job board before you go...
Yeah, it's true.
Right? I mean, there's drivers everywhere. So, okay, so now it's about real relevant jobs. The important part about job boards is they become a catch-all. And I think all these big job boards, and Indeed is no different. Indeed is a catch-all, right? That has become a problem for the space because now everybody just puts everything in one spot. I think it's important to one segment so it's local and it's relevant to both audiences, employers and seekers. The other part that I think is really important is technology is making a huge impact on how job boards work. So nowadays, robots are delivering traffic to employers. And the reality of it is this: is I never applied for a job, but if my information is out there, my information is going to be sent to an employer that I'm a potential candidate. So am I really applying for the job? There's good traffic, there's good bot traffic, and there's bad bot traffic. My take is this: is if an individual says, if you have an alert or an agent or a robot that can deliver opportunities for me, please send my information. I'm opting in. But if I didn't do anything, you shouldn't be sending my information. Just an example, which is kind of interesting. I had a dean of one of the state colleges in Maine apply for a customer service job at Jobs in the U.S. I know the fact the person didn't apply for the job.
Of course they did, yeah. Right?
But somehow or another, showing up on my dashboard because my job gets distributed to a bunch of other job boards.
Sure.
And that's the nature of our industry. That's another thing. You post on Jobs in ME, I'm going to sell your ad. I'm going to take your ad, and I'm going to give a budget to everybody else of X amount of dollars, and that drives traffic back to our sites.
Sure.
So,
well, you know, so there's this whole job board. Talk to me about profiles, right? So companies now want to see this person. They want to know more about this person. They get a resume, but they want profile information as well. How does that now play into it?
So there's two sides to this, right? One is there are some people that say, you know what, I can go online and find anything about everybody. So whatever you put on social media, I guarantee you your employer has looked it up before they called you in, right? If it's on LinkedIn, same thing. So you have to be very – so as a job seeker, I think it's extremely important that you're cognizant about whatever you put on your social media profiles, whether it's business profiles or social, it's going to be seen. If you're hanging out at a celebrating some major event and dancing on top of a bar, it's going to be out there. It's great. It might have been fun when you put it up there, but just so you know, whatever it portrays the employer in the decision making. So the profiling, there's other ways that people look for profiles. There are systems out there that allow a video interview. There are systems out there that allow for kind of consolidated data from multiple platforms. So there's tools for creating the profile, but I think it's really important that the job seekers really manage their own profile and own the data that they put online. Even now, background checks is an example, which is part of how employers get data. You can actually go online, buy your own background check, see what you get about yourself, and then when you go into an interview, you can actually explain. Example, you might have had something happen when you were a teen. You can address it now as opposed to being blindsided or screened out as a result of it. You can basically be upfront saying, hey, you know what? This is what I did. I made a mistake. I can fix it.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. In getting back to the job boards for a second, one of the things that we hear a lot of is searching on the job boards can be difficult. And one word, one hyphen, one comma, one whatever can completely change your results. How does an employer use a job board effectively to ensure they get the results they need when sometimes they're not necessarily sure they're getting bad results?
So a prime example is the job title that you use internally is not necessarily the job title that job seekers are searching for. So I think it's really important that you look at what the job title is and how people are viewing it. An example, if it's digital marketing manager, it might just be marketing manager. You don't need to put digital. If put some content in there, right? There's some things that I think that also an employer can do, which is look at the job descriptions. Don't put so many acronyms in it. Don't put so many abbreviations. Try to use words that people actually think are important for the job that they're looking for. Those are things that will help with search. The other is don't make it too complex and too long. I mean, that's another thing that I think happens a lot, is simplify your job description to the point where it narrows down. But I always use this example for an employer called me and said, we're not getting enough results. And I said, well, what's the job that you're trying to hire for? Hazardous waste material management associate. I said, do you realize it tells them run the other way, right? Right? How about you change it to materials handling associate training will be provided? That changes the whole dynamics of whether an individual might be interested in opening or not. But if you tell them they're going to be dealing with nuclear waste and you don't tell them anything else, you're not going to get applicants.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's kind of like the solid waste disposal expert, which is a garbage collector,
right?
I mean,
sanitation engineer.
Sanitation engineer.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, it's right. You know, but I think those are things that are really important as from an employer perspective, is they really look at how people, like the people that apply for your jobs, are not looking for these internal titles. They're looking for titles that they actually talk about at the Christmas party when somebody says to them, "Hey, what do you do?" "Oh, I'm a sales manager. I'm a customer service representative. I'm an administrative assistant." Things like that, as opposed to something that is internal. Just because you have, you know, code 1234 job does not translate.
Well, the other thing is use the title manager. So just be, manager is such a generic term, right? You can get almost too much information. You type in the word manager. But if you don't give enough of a description, you're also going to get pretty limited. If it's just general manager versus customer service manager or different. So you have to have a little bit more specific to get at least some relevant information into it.
As part of our initiative, we're currently working with a major search platform regarding cloud searching, cloud discovery, and basically searching for jobs. So an example might be we're trying to mitigate against the reasons people don't get the right results. And so if you offer dental benefits and you list that on your job description, should you get dental assistance as your job seekers? So the idea is when does the information that you provide in your job description an actual job description, and when is it just text that is part of what benefits you provide? The industry is moving to a better searching mechanism. And thank God, to be frank with you, Google is getting into this business of search. And I think they'll mitigate against a lot of problems that we're facing in the industry around search. I don't have to go and invest in a major search engine because I already have one. That's Google.
Right. And there's no question that you'd rather give it to the player that knows how to do it best,
that's
right?
And
that's with any company.
I'm good at building relationships with employers. I'm good at finding local job seekers. That's my thing. When I put it onto the interweb, as we all say sometimes, right? I should leave it to the people who really know how to do search better on a worldwide web basis. But on a local basis, I think I do a pretty good job of finding good quality candidates. For all of our clients, we're either one or two in conversion, and we're either one or two in results. So for a small business that's been in Maine for 20 years, you know, that's really, to me, that's wonderful to
No, and say. You guys do a great job. I mean, certainly we use yours at our organization and have been consistent in getting great names.
Thank you for your business. We really appreciate it.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, General Manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts. StopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we're talking with Syed Eastman. He is the General Manager and CEO of Jobs in the U.S. And we've been talking about recruiting, we've been talking about job boards, we've been talking at everything having to do with talent management in reality. As we go into the last segment here, we only have a few minutes left. I think one thing that would be really helpful for the audience is maybe the last thing they remember is tips, things that they really can take away from today's shows, things that they could do right now today, other than call you, in terms of really, we'll put that in as the ending tip, all right? But other things that they can remember from today's show to make a difference in their employees and in their lives and job searching.
So I think the first thing that I will tell any and all employer is that you should always be recruiting. In a tight job market, your employees are potential fodder for somebody else. So if you're recruiting, you mitigate against the chances that you may lose somebody that's important to your business and you can't find somebody else to fill that gap. Secondly, I think it's extremely important that you look at all your job descriptions and make sure that those job descriptions are translated to real and relevant ads that you can put online at any given point. In other words, don't use internal job descriptions to advertise for job candidates. Secondly, do the same thing for your job titles. I think it's extremely important that you look at your internal job titles and convert them to marketable external titles. Lastly, I encourage everybody to have a system of record for labor compliance. It's important for everybody, big or small, to have some repository where they keep all the records for anybody that is applying for a job. All right. And then I would say lastly, I think it's extremely important that you cast a wide net. No job board is going to be an end-all be-all. We're not an end-all be-all to the solutions of finding great talent. I think it's important that you create a strategy for how you look for talent. And that involves search, social, local placement, national placement, depending on the opportunity. And it's important that you create the strategy as opposed to looking at it as a one-off solution.
What got you into this industry?
You know, the human capital space, I got in by happenstance. I got out of college during the 1990s. My intent was to go into banking, and banking was in the tank. I went overseas and came back after a year of working overseas and realized that the best opportunity for me for growth was sales. I got into sales, into time and attendance. I didn't realize that time and attendance was an HR component at the time, and it was my first foray into software. And all of a sudden, it cascaded. So I went from time and attendance to HRIS software, and then I got into the online media world with Monster. I spent 7 years at Monster. And so when I look back at it, 25 years later, somehow or another, I'm in the HR space. Who the heck would have thought?
Who the heck would have thought?
Seriously.
Right? No,
seriously.
It's great. But you love it?
I love it. I love being in Maine, and I'm loving working with the team at Jobs in the U.S. and Jobs in ME. And for me, I say this often, we all have to find a reason that we should go to work every day. And my take is this, is if I go in today and I work with my team and we manage to make some connections between an individual and an employer, the minute that individual applies for a job and gets a call back, we know something positive happens. That person goes home, tells their significant other that they found an opportunity. There's something positive that comes out of that. When there is an opportunity comes to fruition and there's actually a relationship that's built between an individual and a company, there's another celebratory reason for people to be happy about. So from that perspective, I'm hoping that I'm making a difference in people's lives by matching them to the right opportunities, by providing them career advancement in some capacity. I can break it down and saying, you know what, I'm in the advertising space. But you know what? The guy at eHarmony does the same thing, but at the same time, they're touting marriages, et cetera. For me, I just want to create a match between great people and great companies.
And you do it well. We really appreciate you being on the show today. Of course, everybody can go to hrpowerhour.com after the show. They will certainly see your picture, see your information, be able to connect with you directly, and we encourage you to do so. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, David. Really appreciate it for having me.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLLB 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
If your company works on, in, or near the water, workers' comp insurance may not be enough. Hi, this is Ben Ford from VeralDana's Labor and Employment Group. Most employers are required to carry insurance that would protect them in the event a worker is injured on the job. This ends up being a good deal for the employer because in exchange for carrying the insurance, state law protects the employer from direct liability for lawsuits from injured employees. But things change at the water's edge. Companies with employees who work on docks and wharfs may also need to carry longshore and harbors workers insurance. That's what they say in the lingo, US L&H. This protects workers from companies under a federal law designed to compensate injured employees who work on interstate commerce. Out at sea, things are totally different. The Jones Act is an old federal law designed to protect sailors at sea. Unlike workers' comp or US L&H, employees injured at sea can bring lawsuits directly against the company. If you don't have Jones Act insurance, you could be facing a huge liability with no protection. So the bottom line here is that if you're working in all these environments, you need coverage for each type of activity. If you are a long-standing business, you might be okay, but if you are one of the hundreds of new marine-related businesses popping up, you should contact your insurance agent. If you don't have an insurance agent, make sure you get one that understands the marine market. And of course, if you have any questions about workers' compensation, the Jones Act, US L&H, contact Veral Dana.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week. Sponsored by VeralDana.com. Next week on the HR Power Hour, our guest is Alan Walker, president of Dale Carnegie in Tennessee, and he discusses modern leadership development trends. Leadership development has had an increased focus with the improved economy and lower unemployment rate. Organizations are focusing on what can capture and retain talent, and employee development is a key factor. Listen to Alan and your host, David Chulo, discuss some of the key ways and give examples of organizations that are truly making a difference with their employees. That's on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLLB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.